Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank. How are you today?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I am in a fabulous mood because I am excited about today's topic. I love talking about how we define home and our hearts and community. And so I'm looking forward to getting on to the subject of how we go ahead and define home in small towns.
Good, John Cougar.
I know. I played that just for you. And also, to get us in the mood and the spirit for today's conversation, you know, arguably, though, I don't know if we live in a small town anymore. I think when we first moved here 30-something years ago, Rio Grande had 7,000 residents, and San Luis Obispo County total had 50,000 residents, and I don't think that we are that small town anymore. But I'm curious, you know, how things have changed in how we view our town. And do you feel like San Luis Obispo County is home to you?
As of now, I do. I've been here since 1986, so now it's become home. It took a while, maybe 5 to 10 years, before I stopped thinking of where my parents lived as home. And, you know, Bree, who normally engineers your show, she took this week off, and I asked her where she was going, and she goes, "Oh, I'm going home." And so I think it takes a while before where you are becomes home.
Well, and it's interesting because I've said on the show before that I have never fully felt that my soul resides here on the Central Coast, that there is parts of me that feels at home is in different places, part on the East Coast and part in Northern California. And this has always been the place I lived. Like, this is the place I raised my children. This is where I make my living. But it's never still has felt like the place my soul resides. And that's how I think about home. So when you think about home, is it because your physical home is here?
It's where your stuff is, where your loved ones are.
Home is where the heart is.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm curious to have this conversation today about how we define home. And there's a project that is taking place this summer that's being spearheaded by two of our favorite people and guests on the show, Ashlyn Hatch, who recently graduated from Reed College, and Kyle Berlin, who's midway through his studies at Princeton. And they have come together to collaborate this summer to do a project talking about home and how we define it, primarily in Arroyo Grande. So they've created the Rhizome Theater Company, and their mission statement is that they're committed to sowing seeds of social cohesion, awareness, and empathy through live documentary theater made by the community, for the community, about the community. And so I'm curious to see what they've discovered in interviews with people around Arroyo Grande about what it is to be in community and how we define home. But I'm also curious to know why they were inspired at this young age of 22 years old to feel this nostalgic pull back to their hometown to even try to define it for themselves, what home is. So this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And as always, you'll be invited to be part of the conversation, 805-781-3875, when we're ready to open the phones. I hope you're thinking about how you define home and what that is to you. You can also be part of the conversation by liking our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, and you'll get updates every week about the show. You can leave me messages there or comment on the posts. You can find me through email at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And if you're just tuning in for the first time and would like to learn a little more about the show, you can check out our website, thereluctanttherapist.com, put together by my lovely daughter, Kelly Barrett. And finally, if you'd like to listen to previous shows or capture this show for listening at another time, you can go to the kcbx.org website, look under the News Talk tab, and we're right at the top, and all of the shows are updated regularly. Or if you'd like to subscribe, you can go to the App Store, iTunes, Apple Tunes now, I don't know what they call it, NPR One, but search any way that you look for podcasts, A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and the show will come up, and you can subscribe and listen at your convenience. So let's think about the idea of home and how we define that and what it means to us. Oliver Wendell Holmes said, "Where we love is home, home that our feet may leave, but not our hearts." And so we're thinking about the difference between where I live and how I define home or where my soul resides. Listen a little bit more to John Mellencamp. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. My guest today, Ashlyn Hatch.
Hi.
It's nice to see you. So Ashlyn worked as the producer of the show 2 summers ago, and now she is back in her hometown, a recent graduate of Reed College. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you here. And are bringing along with you your education experience at school and now creating documentary theater here on the Central Coast with your partner and friend, Kyle Berland.
Hi.
Hi, Kyle. Nice to have you back.
It's always wonderful to be here.
So Kyle is also a regular guest on the show talking about his experiences traveling the world and studying at Princeton and how he has come to understand, I don't know, the ideas of melancholy, right?
Yeah.
That was last year's exploration. And you traveled all over Europe and different places in the world to see how different cultures and countries define and live with the idea of melancholy, and that there were certain places in the world that just kind of, I don't know what the word is, are about melancholy.
Right.
That it's not something that they run away from or fear. So did you have your experiences out in the world, you know, studying places of melancholy, influenced this project you and Ashlyn have undertaken?
Yeah, certainly. I spent the last several summers, as you said, traveling around, talking to people from all over the world, asking them about sort of about their life stories and paying particular attention to those parts of lives that people generally don't want to talk about, the sad parts, the parts that contain grief and whatnot. And I felt this urge to come back home and conduct something similar in a place that I really knew. I think that I just wanted to come back to a place where I knew the culture, I knew how to get around, I knew all the logistics, and I thought that would better enable me to go even further in depth in considering other people's stories and whatnot.
Well, and I don't think you'd associate the Central Coast either with the idea of melancholy, considering we're known as the happiest place on Earth. So there is a strange juxtaposition of someone who is fascinated by melancholy and happiness.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of people around here who sort of feel oppressed by that label, like you're not able to have problems because here we are in the happiest place on Earth, or in the United States, or whatever Oprah said. I'm very curious, what does it mean to live a full life, which naturally contains lots of grief and sadness, in a place that is advertised or known as a happy place? Wanted to round out that picture a little bit.
And how has it been being back home?
It's always interesting, personally, and culturally, and whatnot. You know, I only come back a couple times a year at most, and so it's sort of like sporadic glimpses of change. You know, it's like if you don't see someone in your family, and the next time you see them, they're so tall or they look totally different. It's kind of like that, coming back and seeing how the place has changed, but then also how the people in my life have changed or often haven't changed that much. So I feel I feel like I'm always kind of passing through, which makes a different kind of relationship to being here.
You're more visitor now than resident in some ways. And Ashlyn, how has it been for you returning? Because you've completed your education, and so you're kind of at that moment of where do you leap next? So do you feel like you've leapt home for a period of time, or is this also just a visit?
You know, I'm not sure, and I wasn't sure going into this summer, and I think that that has been, for me, actually a really compelling part of doing the project, that I'm figuring that out as I am figuring out what this project is going to be and look like when we put it on its feet as a theater piece. Because so much of what we're talking about is the difference between being stable in this place and calling it home long term, and then the sort of other version of being here, which is growing up and leaving or coming back and visiting, and like Kyle was saying, and then going on to something else. And I am appreciating the unique position that I'm in, which is a position of in-betweenness.
Oh, nicely said. And so the project that we keep alluding to with Rhizome Theater Company, can you talk a little bit about what this is that you're in the process of creating, but what was the genesis? What was the idea behind Rhizome Theater Company and coming home?
Well, I think over the past several months, I guess it would be like in the beginning of the fall, Kyle and I started talking about wanting to do a project that did center on home. I remember we were both home, I think, very briefly, actually, last summer. I had been in New York and Kyle had been going around Europe. And we said, what if we were home next summer and made something about here? And then, you know, throughout this year, there were a lot of tumultuous political conversations that I think were very distinctly on both of our radars at our schools, which, like, my school is in Portland on the West Coast, Kyle's school in Princeton on the East Coast. But we certainly saw a lot of ties between what was going on in our school homes, but we didn't actually know what the ties were between those conversations that were going on in our school homes and the ways that those conversations were being had or not had in our home where we grew up. And so, we had this idea of, well, what if we went home and interviewed people in our community and asked them what they think about this place and the things that are happening here or not happening here, conversations that are being had or not being had, what they would like to see change, what they think could be better, and then took those interviews and put them into a live performance piece and shared it with people and made it a space where people can have the conversations that they're looking to have and maybe that they feel like are difficult to have when, like Kyle alluded to, this is a place where people feel like they kind of need to be happy all the time. So that's the sort of vision statement for the project, I guess, which Kyle can build on if he wants to.
I would also chime in absolutely to all of that. Also, I think we were thinking about the sort of national political conversation after the election this year, you know, which I think was surprising to a lot of people the way that it turned out, or maybe not, but it's certainly a unique political moment in our history. And to me, it seemed that it was very much about the question of home and who belongs in this country and who doesn't, and immigration and all these different types of things, which really at their base are questions about home and what kind of country and home we take ourselves to be on the national level. But obviously, you know, there's no way to just sort of enter the ether of national discussion. So we figured what better place to start that conversation about what kind of place we take ourselves to be, what kind of country we take ourselves to be, than in our own hometown, starting small, if you will.
Well said. And so when you talk about, when you describe the Rhizome Theater, and you wanted to tell people, because I had to look it up to see what the definition was, what this theater company title reflects for you.
Yeah.
The word rhizome.
So a rhizome, it refers to like a biological structure, but it also refers to sort of a school of thought, philosophically speaking. But the way that I like to talk about it is like a shape with a lot of different entrance and exit points that isn't sort of categorizable as any sort of like typical shape. So it's not a line, it's not a square, it's not a circle, it's something that is its own ever-shifting shape. And it kind of looks like a web when you look at it, actually. And the assertion that the philosophical school of thought puts forth surrounding the rhizome in this shape is that it's really possible to think about history and culture and society in a way that isn't just a single straight line. Mm-hmm. Often when we're taught history or when we talk about stories, we talk about them from a single point of view or like a single strain of thought. But rhizome, the shape and the school of thought, and now the name for our theater company, asserts, well, let's actually think about things as a complex system of relationships. So everybody is in conversation always with everybody else, and there's no way to look at a story or a narrative or a piece of history or anything from just one point of view and to do so accurately and compassionately. What we really need to do is think about all of the different ways that people are involved with each other. So I think that is my understanding of the company name. Kyle?
And you sound like systems therapist, because that's right. In a good systems therapy scene, you never know anyone's story until you see them in the context of all of the people they interact with and the environment that they live within, and that how all of those social contexts and environmental contexts and political contexts act on the individual and therefore create their responses to the world around them.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I think it's impossible, as Ashlyn said so eloquently, and as you were alluding to, it's impossible to consider anyone on their own. Even someone who is living, you know, in total isolation. It's true that old, I forget who said it, but that old saying that, you know, no person is an island.
Yes, no man is an island.
That there's, you know, we are socially created beings, and we are always in this flux of relationships, as Ashlyn said, with both the material and other human worlds.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guests today are Ashlyn Hatch and Kyle Berlin, and we're talking about their project, a documentary theater project about home, specifically in the town of Arroyo Grande, where they both grew up, and how the citizens of Arroyo Grande and here in the Central Coast feel about this place that they live in, and how they define it as home for them. And ultimately, what's going to happen with all of these interviews that you're in the process of doing right now? What will be the culmination of this summer's project?
So right now we are just wrapping up doing really a lot of interviews. We've been really lucky to talk to people from all across the AG community, some people who live in AG, some people who work in AG, some people who go to school in AG. And then what we're working on right now as we wrap up the interviews is figuring out how to weave these interviews together such that they can become a theater piece that people can come to and sort of maybe experience a holistic view of what AG is or means to the people who call it home. And that's a big project. It's difficult. It's really hard. And so there's sort of two things at play here. One is that we're making a documentary theater piece, and documentary theater is where you go out and interview people or like find archival material or take things from newspapers or what have you and sort of put it all together, and that's how the script is made. And then the other thing happening is that we're devising the show, which is different from how you normally think of theater, I think, because the script isn't pre-written, and it's not written by one person, and it's not, like, written at one time, and then we go and figure out what we're going to do on stage. We're making it together. Kyle and I are collaborating on assembling it, and we have our friend McColomy Alexander Hills, who is composing new music for it as we write our script or compile our script, and we have designers who are helping us create the space as we come up with ideas. And so it's all very exciting and very much in flux, like we were talking about with that rhizome shape where mm-hmm. nothing is actually fixed, which is, I think, thrilling and exhilarating, poses a lot of awesome opportunities for conversation, and also is, like, kind of terrifying, right? Because
at this point you have no script.
Yeah.
You're a month away from putting it up.
Right, yeah. But I think what it does is it makes it so that this thing really can be new and in response to the community that it's supposed to speak to and with. Mm-hmm. Because it's not like an Arthur Miller show or a Shakespeare piece, right, where people are really attached to the script as it has been. Like, this script is of, by, and for the community, and we're going to do feedback sessions, and we're going to ask people what they think about it. And the script can and will change based on what people in the community think and want to hear, which I'm excited about.
So part of the work is you're interviewing people with a series of questions, and you're going to compile all these answers and then kind of let people in a mirrored way hear their responses come back to them, and then sit with those responses and determine, is this really how we want to be seen as a community? Again, going back to the therapeutic piece, I mean, that's one of the most powerful things in therapy, is for the therapist to reflect back to the person the story they're telling them, mm-hmm. and let that person hear that story and say, is this really the story I want to be living? So, you know, in some ways, you're giving the community an opportunity to get a mirrored experiences. Do we want to be known as a place with an in-and-out fast food, right, on the side of the freeway? Or do we want to be known as the place where you drive through to get to Pismo Beach? Or do we want to be something more soulful and deep?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think that we, you know, we all go about our daily lives and we have so many things to do. We have jobs and responsibilities and whatnot. And it can be easy to forget that, you know, we are living in one place and we do have these relationships which define our experience, and to sort of take that time to reflect on them intentionally, I think would go a long way. That's the hope in sort of living a more intentional and thoughtful life together. And part of that too is not only reflecting back what people have said, but also in letting people see what and hear what their neighbors and friends and enemies are thinking, and simulating conversations on stage that people might be afraid to have in real life between different viewpoints and backgrounds.
So taking people with different perspectives and actually putting them in conversation via the script, mm-hmm. so that those things that might divide us can be spoken about in the safety of a theater piece. And one of the things I find interesting about Aurora Grande is that 101 runs right through the town. And so there's this natural divide in the community of the people who live east of the freeway and those who live west of the freeway, and how those two sides of the freeway view each other, you know, and how they feel about the community or the services or what is truly Aurora Grande. Because it's amazing that it, you know, heads all the way back into Wasna Valley in the very rural sense, and then all the way down to the other end where you're looking out over the ocean. It's very different perspectives. So I'm curious to know, you know, some of the questions you're asking people. The first one is, how is it that you define home? You're also asking people, what is it that they want for their community? Or one of the questions I loved in your interview is, if you had $5,000 to use for the good of the community, how would you spend that? Another question you asked is, what are your associations and thoughts about the phrase nice town, normal people, as it relates to Rio Grande? Because for anyone who's familiar with that part of the county, that's kind of been the unofficial motto of Rio Grande for the last 20 years, nice town, normal people. And so, you're asking these questions, and I'm wondering to know, in the 100 interviews you've done, what kind of responses are you getting? Are they expected, kind of a norm, or are they all over the place?
I would say there are some things that are strikingly similar about the interviews, and I say strikingly because we're interviewing people from a lot of different backgrounds and walks of life and
for
relationships
example.
To the community. For example...
Like teachers,
oh,
or
yeah.
long-time
teachers,
residents,
students, long-time residents, people who live very far away from AG and commute to work there or to go to school there but can't afford to actually live in the city.
People who've left AG, recent immigrants to AG, homeless people or formerly homeless people in and around AG, things like that, people like that.
Yeah. So people from very different backgrounds, but some of the answers are really strikingly similar. Like, I would say a lot of people's definition of home and what it means to call a place home actually have a lot of similarities, like being around your family, feeling safe, feeling like you can say and be whatever you want or need to. Another striking similarity that has come up is that everybody, regardless of what their viewpoints is, seems to feel like there are conversations that they're not yet welcome to have in AG or finding an outlet to have in AG, particularly conversations about things that are like difficult or scary to bring up. Or,
for example,
so I interviewed somebody a couple weeks ago who is a survivor of sexual assault. And she was saying that she really was pushing when she was at Arroyo Grande High School to have conversations about this with administrators or to find a space to have a conversation about it with her peers and continues to be pushing toward that and just really hasn't found a lot of people who are willing to engage with her about that because of what she perceives to be a pushback based on the fact that people don't really want to acknowledge that, like, sexual assault happens here. They would much rather say, like, there's no way that that could happen here and have that be the end of the conversation. But she's saying, like, no, I actually need for, you know, for her own sake and for the sake of people who also have experienced or maybe will experience something similar to what she experienced, we need to be having those conversations. But how do we have them? I've also had conversations with a lot of people who really would love to have dialogues with people who voted differently from them in the past election, but have been really candid in saying, I don't know whether at any conversation that I would have with somebody who voted differently from me, whether it would go anywhere or whether we would just yell at each other.
And I think there's also a wide variety of religious perspectives in Arroyo Grande. I remember reading at one time that there were more churches per capita in Arroyo Grande than in any other place in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't usually associate that with Arroyo Grande, and yet it is true. And then, you know, what is it that draws people to that community? Because we have had a history of hate crimes in the last 10 years that kind of hit the news for a short period of time and then get quickly buried by the nice town normal people mantra that we seem to want to buy into. And I always wonder, you know, that there's a sense of sterility about Arroyo Grande that people search for to, you know, they don't want messy. They don't want it to be scary or too diverse, that there's something about that normal people. And if we think about the definition of normal, it means to be average. So we're not talking about anyone striving to be in a place that's above average or extraordinary or gifted. It's just kind of hanging the same. So have you experienced that in people's conversations about Arroyo Grande?
Yes. One of the interviews we conducted, one of the interviewees said, and I think she put it well, that Arroyo Grande to her seems like a live and let live community more than a activist or a sort of community-based community. It's, you know, people want to conduct their own lives. And I think that's part of the dialogue and the rhetoric about nice town, normal people. Normal people in a lot of ways in the United States now means, I think, like average means not necessarily coming together in dialogue in this fractured time that we live in. And so, you know, in regards to putting down or not talking about difficult things in AG's recent history, like hate crimes and whatnot, I think that goes against precisely this idea of AG as such a nice place and not wanting to talk about that, because for any real change to happen, there first has to be a disruption. You know, it's unpleasant. And I think that that's the primary barrier, is there has to be a disruption for there to be any change, and people don't want disruption naturally in their lives.
Which I think what drew people to this place, because I would imagine that since there were 7,800 people in Arroyo Grande 35 years ago, that the majority of the people who have, I don't know what we're at now, almost 20,000 people, have people who have moved here and have been drawn to the area for certain reasons. And I would imagine one of the reasons is they wanted to get away from everything that felt disruptive, and maybe that sense of normalcy made them feel safe. But I wonder how many people really feel like it is home in the way that a home needs to be dynamic. Because as Ashlyn was talking about in the idea of rhizome, what makes families work is the dynamics of family, that we all are thinking creatures, feeling creatures within that family system. And in order to grow and thrive and develop, we have to have the space within our home to be different or to speak out or to challenge the norms of that family system and still be accepted and loved and appreciated. And so we're seeing those growing pains within the greater community the way we see them in families. When young people go into adulthood, when they leave for college and then leave to go out on their own, families have to readjust. Parents have to redefine what family is once their children are out the door. And I think we're at kind of one of those critical junctions in our community, as we are in our state and our country. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guests are Ashlyn Hatch and Kyle Berlin. We're talking about their Rhizome Theater Project and how we define home. And I look forward to coming back and taking your calls at 805-781-3875. You're listening to Public Radio KCBX.
I'm sitting in the railway station, got a ticket for my destination. Tour of one night stands, my suitcase and guitar in hand, and every stop is neatly planned for a poet and a one-man band. Homeward bound, I wish I was homeward bound. Home, where my thoughts escaping, home, where my music's playing, home, where my love lies waiting silently. Every day is an endless stream of cigarettes and magazines. And each town looks the same to me, the movies and the factories.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. We're talking about those things that bring us homeward bound. With two college students, one recent graduate and one still working, coming back to their hometown and looking at it through a different lens and what it means to be from someplace or to call a place home. And I'm curious to know what your feelings are about this topic as you're sitting and listening in maybe your home or driving through your hometown, whether it's Aurora Grande or anywhere within the listening audience. How do you define home? Do you feel like you are living in a place that feels like home to you? And beyond the idea that we all kind of hear is home is where the heart is and home is where my family is, but really this idea of home where you feel a part of something bigger than yourself, the community. Did you come here because you could afford the housing? Did you come here because you were drawn to the weather? Did you come here because it felt like the place your soul resides? And how has it felt being a part of this place? And then as Ashlyn and Kyle were talking about this idea of rhizome, things that are moving and not static, that there's this idea that people they're interviewing are looking for change and conversations, and yet they feel a bit stifled because the motto or overriding definition of Rio Grande, that things don't change. It's a nice town, normal people, right? We don't shake things up. But is that a recipe for health in a community? Can we continue to grow as people and as communities if we try to jump in and kind of freeze time where it is? You know, kind of freeze the town and community as it's always been. Does that serve the majority of our constituents? The number to be part of the conversation is 805-781-3875. Bill, why don't you get us started? What's on your mind today?
Well, I've been a Aurora Grande resident for going on 50 years now. And one of the things that I've noticed is how the ethnic diversity has changed over the years. And one of the things that really made me think about it years ago was I was looking through a friend of mine's high school yearbook who graduated in the late 60s, or early 60s, I guess it was. And the pictures and the names told me that Aurora Grande was once only one-third white and one-third Oriental, and the rest were Mexicans. And, you know, and it's all changed now since people have come up here from L.A. and brought their values with them and expected the minorities to make way for them.
So it sounds like Bill saying that we actually had more diversity as a community at one point and feel more monocultured now. What's been your experience? Thank you for calling, Bill.
So just historically speaking, we have interacted with some historical sources who I think have corroborated that claim that AG in the past was perhaps a bit more of a diverse place than it is now. And I don't know the particular progression of how the demographics changed and at what speed, but we've had a lot of conversations with people who have noted, similar to Bill, that they want to be thinking about the racial demographics of AG and how and whether AG is really embracing diversity. I spoke a conversation that I keep thinking back to when I think about issues of diversity in AG is one where I spoke to a young Black woman in the area who grew up here, and she talked a lot about microaggressions, so things that people do and say to her that are not said out of spite or out of intentional racism, but just maybe belie a misunderstanding of her or her culture or sort of a tokenization of her as like one of very few Black women in the area. And it did make me think that, yeah, you know, AG is a place that does still have diversity. We are not an entirely white community, but there probably are really a lot of conversations that could be had that could help make it a more accepting place, right? Not just a tolerant place, not just a place where people live and let live, but a place where people welcome and celebrate diversity.
And I've often wondered, you know, how you define Rio Grande, because we have the village and a lot of people would say, well, that's the center, but it's really a tourist center. If there's not really a meeting place or a community hangout where people go or how they identify. And then if you get to the west side of the town, it's just kind of strip malls and drive through on the way to the beach. So have you heard from people that there is a sense of identity beyond just nice town, normal people? And letting, you know, do they feel connected to this place in some deeper way that you're hearing about?
I think they do, based on a lot of people that we've heard. On the one hand, there's this idea of nice town, normal people, and the sort of averageness, as you said, of what normal suggests. But on the other hand, a lot of people talk about how special this place, the Central Coast, and Rio Grande as part of it is. You know, for its climate, but also a lot for the people who are here and for a sort of community-minded atmosphere that people sense and people willing to engage with each other in a way that they're not in big cities. Someone said when people honk in Rio Grande, it's usually to say hi to each other,
yeah,
not to get
someone
out of my way. And I think that rings true. So there's certainly that, but I think also, as you said, this is one of the things that struck me as well in the interviews is that just geographically, architecturally, the way that I think a lot of American towns and cities are laid out, there's a lack of public space. There isn't a public square that is more than commercial, a place where people can come together and talk and commune and whatnot. Not that those don't exist, but I think it's difficult for people to commune in public and just sort of hang out.
I always think of our farmers markets as being our community spaces. If mm-hmm. I'm going to run into people I know, it's going to be at one of two places, either one of the farmers markets in town or Marshall's. Like that does seem to be the community gathering spots. So I'm also curious to know, you know, if I loved the question, if you had $5,000 to put forth for the good of the community, how would you spend that money? And I'd love to hear from listeners, if you had $5,000 to put forth towards your community, again, Rio Grande or wherever you are and calling home, how would you want to see that $5,000 spent? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. And also, how is it you define home? You know, do you feel at home because this is where you got a job? Did you feel, you know, I wonder if there's that sense of being called to the land. because there's a lot that's written about ancestral lands, and that for people who have lived in the same place as their ancestors did hundreds of years before, there is more than just the sense of this is my home because my family lives here, I have a job here, but their body is connected to the ground, to the rock formations, to the water, to the air in certain places. And do we have that on the Central Coast? Is there, do people feel a sense of grounding in that soulful way that I mentioned earlier of where your soul resides? And I remember reading that for a lot of the United States, one of the reasons we are such unsatisfied people or a disconnected or unattached peoples is because most of the people here have left their ancestral homes. And so they eternally wander the United States trying to find that place that feels physically like home, bodily, that we feel, as you talked about, we're all interconnected. We're connected to our ecology, to the trees and the plants and the place that we live. And do people really feel that connection here? Or is that why it's so easy for us to pave over the lands that we live in because we don't have an inherent physical attachment to the lands? 805-781-3875. I'm speaking with Ashlyn Hatch and Kyle Berlin about their project about home and the documentary theater that they're going to be creating at the end of the summer, actually midway through August, that you'll all be invited to hear these dialogues they've been collecting. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on it, because I know that Ashlyn and Kyle are still collecting interviews. They'd like to hear from you and your thoughts on how you define home in this place that we all inhabit, and how you would like to see it grow or change. And again, what would you do with that 5,000?
Or not change.
Or not change. For a lot of people, they'd like to, if anything, see it go back to a certain space. Right. 805-781-3875. So, Ashlyn, I'll start with you. That $5,000, because someone had to come up with that question. You must have something you'd like to spend it on.
I don't know. I think one of the great things about doing this project has been that I've just become so much more aware of all the different needs in our community and all of the different people who are working to support those needs. So I don't know. I think maybe just based on my personal experience that I'm going through right now, I would want to put the money toward creating a space for public art, because right now I think it's really hard for people who don't already have financial support to make stuff that speaks to what is going on in the community, that speaks to how they are feeling, that isn't like new or isn't perfectly polished, that's new and kind of exciting and different. So I think I would put it toward like creating a space where people could come and share whatever they want to share, make it like a gallery performance space type thing.
Right, because we don't really have a community theater space. I mean, people assume that the Clark Center is, but that's a very expensive proposition to use that space. So we really, in a lot of ways, have kept people from being able to bring in new ideas, new experiences, that what happens in this community is very much monitored by those institutions that are in control of these spaces. And so the only way we could really get more voices into the conversation is to have free and public open spaces for people to gather. And I think that's a really important thing to think about, that it's almost like, in some ways, propaganda. If you have no public space, then the institutions control what the motto or mission is of that community. Elise, thanks for calling. What's on your mind today? Oh, Elise, are you there?
Insofar as we have our park and our music series, and we have good support for the children with the recreation programs. But one thing that I feel is really neglected in Templeton is the Salinas River corridor, and in how people like to use the river for a lot of different activities, but nobody seems to understand that it's a very special and fragile environment, and it could use cleaning up, and it can use, TLC and support as a community. It's almost an extension of the community as far as when the river's running and people like to go there on hot days. And it would be really nice to see people gather in the community to support that river corridor.
And it seems Templeton in itself is already a community that does a great job of bringing together residents, right, on weekly or monthly concerts and gatherings in the park.
Yes, it's phenomenal. There are so many programs within the community of Templeton itself that this is just the one piece that I've never seen. As a resident, I've never seen anything come up about venturing east into the river. The programs for the children and for the elderly and for the general public and the farmers market is phenomenal on Saturdays.
And so it's just bringing a more broad opportunities in Templeton. It's expanding your web, because I think in many ways Templeton is a great example for other small communities on the Central Coast of how to be inclusive with residents who might have nothing in common during the week, but they love to meet and have a family picnic and listen to music on Friday night.
Yeah, they have their Wednesday night concerts out
Wednesday
there in
nights.
The park.
Yes.
And I think that our farmers markets on Saturdays draw people from quite a distance away. And there'll be young people playing music, people dancing, people singing, people doing all sorts of different activities. Our fledgling library that's trying to be built, they have book sales often at Templeton Farmers Market on Saturdays to support the library. So, yeah, I agree that Templeton is a real shining example of community.
Absolutely. So the next thing then is to get those $5,000 pledges and start looking into how to do something with the River Quarter. And Elise, thank you for bringing that up, because it goes along with this idea, again, is that our home is more than just the subdivisions that we build and house people in, that our home is made up of the ecology and the environment in which we should become a part of and not try to just dominate or forget about to make it all viable and living. Michelle, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, of course, I've been on hold for a while, and I've noticed the conversation changed a little bit, and I just had a quick question about the current topic for the river. You didn't say it was the Salinas River, did you?
She said, Elise said that it was the river coming through Templeton. I'm not familiar with North County. I'm assuming it would be the Salinas River, or I don't know the river that runs through Templeton.
Oh, well, I live in Monterey County, and I'm actually just driving through Santa Barbara and turned on the radio, but it's ironic that you bring up the Salinas River, because for the past 2 years, I mean, just speaking about ecology, my community in Monterey County has been fighting fracking wells on the Salinas River, and I know that fracking is an issue here in Santa Barbara as well.
Absolutely.
We passed a bill, ban fracking, and Chevron actually sued the Board of Supervisors to try to get their permittable amount of fracking wells on there. But the Salinas River is definitely a really special water. I mean, it feeds the valley that feeds America. I just thought I'd bring that up. But my original comment about connecting with land, I thought, you know, I think everybody is very different as far as how they connect to the land or their sense of home and their sense of place. And in general, I travel a lot, and I find myself at home when I feel a sense of the living, and the living is usually like surrounded by trees. Like even if I'm in New York City, there's cherry blossom trees and birds, and you can hear them echo in the streets, and it reminds me of Europe. Or I could be in New Mexico and experiencing a mountain valley and cows or something, and it's the way the air smells when it brushes off the land, and it's so sacred and beautiful, and it's those little things that make us all feel alive. And I'm just so grateful to be alive in this time when people are waking up, even if it's not everybody.
Beautifully said. Michelle, thank you for taking the time to call and drive safely. And thank you for bringing up the Salinas River, because it's one of those most interesting things to me, having lived in California all of my life and along the Central Coast, that this beautiful Salinas River runs and connects all of the Central Coast, and yet we never talk about it as a viable aspect to the Central Coast and how the branches off of the Salinas River feed different communities. And it is something that has surprised me, for being such an environmentally conscious part of the country, that we seem to ignore one of our most valuable environmental resources. And going off of that, have you had people talk about the physicality of Aurora Grande's home? Has that come up?
I mean, yeah, I think people have spoken not so much about like resources, but more about like the actual physical architectural space, like Kyle was talking about before. People talk about places where they either feel called to gather, or where they feel sort of ill at ease, or where they feel excited because they know they'll run into people who they recognize. But we haven't had actually too many conversations about nature in Arroyo Grande yet.
There has been a number of references and stories about land in Arroyo Grande, and particularly in relation to its history and thinking about it, the sort of silent history that land has. So a number of people have referenced when Japanese residents of Arroyo Grande were sent to internment camps at the beginning of World War II after Pearl Harbor, that white farmers who stayed behind picked up their land and maintained it for them until they could come back. And that sort of community nature of the land, or of Chinese railroad workers working in Napomo in the late 1800s, and they were driven out of town by a band of racist anti-Chinese people who came and kicked them out of town. And the sort of silent history of the land that is here locally but speaks to you know, national and international historical events. So the Chinese Exclusion Act, which happened in the United States at the end of the 1800s, it's not just this abstract thing that happened over there. It happened here, too. And I think trying to make that connection to the present is also a goal of our project, that what's going on here locally is not isolated from the larger issues of the nation and the globe. You know, a lot of people, I think, look at what's happening around the world right now or in our country and shake their head and sigh and say, oh, well, there's nothing we can do. There's no relation to us. But I think part of what we want to do with the show is indicate that just like a rhizome, everything's, you know, there's a web. Everything is connected in this way. And what we're experiencing locally is not isolated from the problems of our nation, but part of them.
So you're seeing Arroyo Grande and the Central Coast as a microcosm of what's happening elsewhere. And maybe if we can have these conversations that are difficult here, it will spread out into greater conversations around the country. Part of the hope?
Yeah. Well, and I think, I mean, it really is important to us to think about this on a local scale. Of course, we are hoping that these conversations spread out and continue to take place in and around the country, but I don't think it would be in any way, shape, or form a failure if they were contained to our community, because clearly our community needs to be having these conversations. And I think the way that Kyle phrased it, you know, like looking at what's going on in the world and sort of bringing those ideas that are being toyed with out, you know, on a national scale into our local like community conversations, that's a really good way of putting it. And I don't think that we necessarily are, going to be upset if our show, you know, doesn't get like national acclaim or anything. That's not really what we're going for. We're really looking to make this a community effort where we have conversations with each other here and think about, you know, what is going on in Arroyo Grande, California, and what is our relationship as a community to what's going on in the nation.
In this way, I kind of keep going back to this idea of what drew people to this place, you know, because I often think that people end up in their home because they could afford a home there and not necessarily their first choice. Someone's like their second choice or backup school. Or, you know, when during the Dust Bowl, so many people migrated to Napomo because they needed work and there was the opportunity for work. And it wasn't necessarily that Napomo as a landmass drew people there. And I wonder how that, what draws us to a place, changes how we see the place, you know, as more of a resource for our ability to live, or if we feel called to the place because of the beauty, the natural beauty, the environment around it, and how that influences the way people treat that place. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're drawn to a place just because economically it fit for you and it has good schools, you know, what is it that we value? You're going to treat that place much differently than if you felt like, I want to preserve the natural beauty. And to be honest, I wonder if there are people in the community that see Arroyo Grande as a place of natural beauty. Like they'll talk about Montana de Oro or, you know, Pismo Preserve or these places that are out outside of Rio Grande, but we don't talk much about preserving anything in Rio Grande as far as the natural world. So if people want to have their say, is there still time to be interviewed?
Absolutely. If I may, a little plug.
Please do.
Go to our website, www.rhizome.org, and there's a form on there where you can contact us. There's also an online little interview questionnaire if you want to fill that out. And we're also always looking for, you know, more ideas and collaborators. This is truly a community endeavor. And, you know, our show opens August 17th. And runs through the 20th at the Clark Center in AG. It's totally free for everyone. So you know, if nothing else, we encourage everyone to come out to that, even if you're not from AG. I think it's about community in general and the questions of what home is, and those apply to everybody.
So if people want to get in touch with you, it is rhizometheater.org, and it's R-H-I-Z-O-M-E. I want to thank Ashlyn Hatch and Kyle Berlin for being here today to talk about home and to, I hope, start a conversation that we're going to continue. I'd like to have you both back after the performance in August to kind of give us a wrap-up and see where it went and what kind of production you came up with. So we'll hear from both of you later in August. And as always, we appreciate you listening, tuning in, supporting Public Radio KCBX. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or check out our Facebook page or subscribe to our show, A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, through iTunes. You can always send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. I look forward to continuing this conversation next week. And as always, we leave you with love and good wishes for a wonderful summer and week ahead. Some